You are listening to Powder Radio. Brought to you by Powder Magazine.
Welcome to Sponsored, brought to you by Powder Magazine. I'm your host, Mike Powell, and this week on the program, we have Colston Beebe. And you might say, who is Colston Beebe? Well, Colston's a guy who emailed me and said he wanted to be on the show. And no kids, you can't just email in and say you want to be on the show. You have to have some ski sponsors and you have to have a good story behind it. And Colston was born and raised in the Red Mountain area, skied with James Heim growing up, and was on line skis from early on. He eventually moved over to Salomon and then to LiveTech, and now he's on reality TV. Yes, he's on the Bravo Network. And we're going to talk to Colston about being a sponsored skier, what happened to those sponsors, and what's going on now in his life in reality TV. So sit back and we will talk to someone you might not have heard of, you might have heard of, I don't know. His name is Colston Beebe.
Where are you right now?
I'm in Victoria, British Columbia.
Cool. What are you doing up there?
Hanging out, surfing, enjoying life, I guess. Yeah.
Surfing. It's still ski season. I know today's the first day of spring, but you're already on the surf.
Yeah. Getting out there and enjoying it. And it's beautiful. What a fantastic first day of spring. I don't know. Where are you right now?
I'm in Seattle, so not too far. We've got the sun out. I'm starting to feel like a normal human being again once I start seeing the sun.
Right.
I'm sure your winter was spent with a lot of POW this season. It seems like it was firing just about everywhere. And how was it for you?
I'm going to be completely honest. I kind of took a year off.
Whoa.
Ever since grade 9, I've been taking the second semester off school.
Okay.
And I recently graduated from university. So I haven't had a winter off since I was 2 years old, essentially.
Wow. You haven't taken a winter off since grade 2. And I think everything for Colston starts, what, in Roslyn, B.C.?
Exactly. Yes. You've done your research.
Yeah, a little bit. I could have done more, but I was at an event where I was partying a whole bunch. But, you know, in doing my research on you too, it's pretty funny because I come in with a totally skewed perspective of who you are because I don't know you at all.
Right.
But I definitely know a lot of people that do know you. So I think one thing, and I watch your TV show because you're on a reality show that we'll talk about later. Mm-hmm. And those shows don't paint you in the best light at all times. So I have one perspective. Then I talk to some buddies who have known you since you were pretty young. And everything they say is, yeah, you can't really trust that show. He's an awesome guy. And those shows create characters and stories. But that's not exactly who he is. Although it is, but not 100%.
I thought they made me look pretty good compared to what they could have done.
Oh, for sure. For sure. I mean, they could have made you look like a complete and utter douchebag. Every reality show has its moments. And when they get the right footage and they know they can create some drama, they do.
Yeah, absolutely.
But we'll look at your career so far in two different parts, because there is the reality part that's probably talked about a lot right now in your life. But really, your life has been about skiing, snowboarding, surf, and being one with the mountains. And I think that's dominated your life more than anything. And it started in a backpack with your mom?
Yes, that's true. Yep.
So what was the early experience like? I know it was 2 years old in a backpack, but what do you remember from when you first started skiing?
I just remember looking at the mountains completely different. You know, you're a lot smaller and everything feels like, even the smallest lift, it feels like you're in some crazy wild jungle or something. I just remember building like 1 foot jumps and having the most fun. I started snowboarding when I was 6. I did like a little kids program for that.
Okay.
So that's where a lot of my memories were. And then the earlier ski memories, I just remember, I think anyone at that age, they just point it and go straight and don't stop. So that was definitely me.
Yeah, totally. And nothing really hurts at that point in life. So you grow up in Roslyn, BC. Are you with your mom and dad? What's the family like growing up?
Yeah, so my mom and dad separated when I was 5.
Okay.
So I grew up single parent family, low income. But I do have some ski memories of my dad. My dad's from Belize.
Okay.
So yeah, it's kind of funny. Black man on skis. And he had me really young. And I just remember him jumping off stuff, trying to impress me and like not really having the skills.
Okay.
So I have very few ski memories, but those are them. And yeah, it's pretty good.
And are you still tight with your dad and your mom?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, super tight with my mom. And I don't see my dad as much, but yeah, good relationship for sure.
Do you get to go to Belize?
Yeah, I've been a couple of times. It's definitely a change, but it's really cool. I'm like part of one of the biggest families in Belize.
Okay.
I went down there and everyone knew who I was. And like, I'd have people coming up to me in the street like, hey, I'm your cousin. And my uncle started the first radio station in Belize.
Okay.
And so he's like a big deal. Walking around with him, you've got all these people coming up. Yeah, it's pretty wild.
That's an awesome place. Lots of cheap lobster and lots of Belkin beer.
Exactly. You've been.
I've been. It was fun. Does that make you part Belizean?
Exactly.
Okay, so part Belizean, part Canadian. You grew up, your mom, did she work at the resort?
My dad was a lifty for a few years.
So full-on ski bum kind of lifestyle is how you grew up.
Exactly. Yeah, my mom coached cross-country skiing. That was her main source of income. So, and I hated cross-country skiing. I still do.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of exercise.
Yeah.
When you were a younger kid and growing up, reality TV, I think, would be the last thing on your mind of where you would end up.
Oh, man. Pretty much until I did it, it was the last thing I thought I would end up doing. Within skiing, I really focused on not selling out. And that was kind of my whole thing, was like staying super core and not doing the cheesy Instagram stuff and not compromising myself. And I really wanted to be like talent first. Part of it was like, oh, this is funny, like do it for the boys kind of thing. And then part of it was take a break and enjoy it. Yeah, who cares? You know, if you can't beat them, join them. So that was basically the motivation for that. And I'm really happy I did it. I had a really good time.
Yeah, you know, people got to eat.
And that's what it came down to, man. That's exactly... Yeah, that's what it boiled down to.
I mean, at the level you are as a skier in terms of, and I'm just being totally cut and dry, no personal feelings, but you're a great skier. But the level that you're on, you know, you could be making for maybe 6-8 years, what, 8 to 10 to maybe 15 grand a year with a little travel budget. And that's not enough to really make ends meet. And then if a couple breaks happen, then maybe you can make it to that next level. But you've got to eat. And skiing only pays a few top-end people a salary to really be able to have a life and a house and a family. And smart people like yourself are looking at all avenues out there and seeing where they can generate revenue and still live their passions. And it sounds like you're doing that. But you started as a snowboarder at 6. When did you even get into skiing?
When I was 9. I've kind of always had this inherent need to do something different. And so all my friends were snowboarding. And I started reading ski magazines and seeing the Canadian Air Force, Mike Douglas and JP, JF and stuff. And I thought it was so badass, just like mute grabs. I basically just like envisioned myself doing mute grabs, just the way the skis would cross. And I think to this day, it's still like the most stylish thing in snow sports. So that's what turned me onto it. And then I obviously started watching like Seth Morrison and C.R. Johnson and just fully absorbed and staying fully absorbed for 10 years in ski culture and just... It basically, yeah, defined me and was my number one focus for the majority of my life.
Do you also have a ski racing background?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I did Red Mountain Racers for probably 4 years before free skiing just took over everything, you know. And that's a really legit program in the sense that it's created so many like Olympians and skiers like James Heim and Dane Tudor and whatnot. We all came from the same coaches, so it's kind of cool.
It's having that race background. Anybody that has that heads into free skiing. I mean, it's just the foundation that people with a race background have make everything a little bit more effortless. I think right now I look at Marcus Kasten as one of those guys that blows my mind because you know he was a racer, but you see him rip now and it's just like those race speeds.
I think it's essential. I think you can tell like immediately when watching someone and it really makes a difference. It makes everything much more aesthetic, which is in the film world is why we do it. So.
And your crew growing up that you were skiing with, you mentioned James Heim and Dane Tudor, and that was just the local crew there. Were there other people that were involved with that?
My best friends to this day, I guess. We grew up skiing the mountain together. And yeah, everyone I know still skis and still loves it. We used to do the junior free ski circuit.
Okay.
We were probably like 13, 14, and a lot of those people are still my best friends. And it's kind of crazy to see where everyone ended up, so...
Yeah, a lot of the names that you mentioned ended up in solid places within the ski industry, which is great to see. So you were also homeschooled, and it sounds like you might have been homeschooled with Dane. I'm not sure, but you both aren't the smartest people I know. Kidding completely, because I don't know either of you. But so homeschooling is a totally different experience than anything I've ever done. But it sounds like you were able to go to university from there. And you lived and studied abroad, that you were in France for a little bit. And was that a ski decision to go over there and maybe ski in France? Or what was the whole thought process for you there?
That was exactly it. I just figured while I was going to school, I might as well take advantage of that kind of ability to be able to go overseas and study. And then I stick to the same program where I did the first semester and took the second semester off. And I went straight to, I think, Engelberg. And then I went to Chamonix and all over the place, man. Yeah, it was great. And I feel like I couldn't have made that happen if I didn't go to school there. Believe it or not, one particular sponsor paid me less that year because they felt that I needed to be in North America to reach their demographic or whatever.
Uh-huh.
That's kind of interesting. But for me, it was like the adventure definitely outweighed that. you know, the Alps are something special. So I really wanted to experience that. It was my first time skiing over there, really. So,
well, it sounds like, you know, at that point in your life, you've come a long way. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I don't want to say you grew up a poor kid, but you grew up a kid in a single family home who lives in a ski resort town. So it's hard to make ends meet. I'm sure your mom had to work her ass off to get you where you are today, but it didn't sound like you sacrificed anything. You homeschooled, which is a choice. It's not a sacrifice by any means. It's just a different way to do things. And then you're going to go to France and live and study there. There's not too many people who can't make ends meet doing that. So not like you sacrificed anything, but you probably had to make a few tough decisions along the way. Were there any challenges based around money that affected your upbringing?
I'm still not very rich, but I've always, I mean, I guess I've just kind of been blessed in the sense, like, I've had an extremely fortunate lifestyle, even from a young age. My mom got a job. She was a camp counselor for a children's camp in Switzerland.
Okay.
So I had been over there, and that's kind of why I wanted to go back as well. It was like a really kind of wealthy camp. And so I was there, obviously, because it was free babysitting, but I would be hanging out with these Nigerian princes and Saudi royalty and just living this crazy Swiss lifestyle every summer. That's kind of where it all sort of started, that kind of like me being this outsider in this world of affluence and kind of experiencing that. And that was for 4 summers. So I think having that at a young age set the tone of, I don't know, I still can't really explain how I end up in these situations, but it seems to be like a general kind of theme.
Cool. Well, it sounds like you maximize wherever you go, the experiences that you have. And it also sounds like you look out there and see what opportunities are out there and seize them, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know, and sponsorship-wise, I believe your first sponsor, and I could be totally wrong, but it was Line Skis from a long time ago. Is that correct?
Man, you're on it. Yes, it was, yeah.
And is that through Jeff Schmuck? Did he help out with that?
100%. Yeah, he got me my first free pair of skis. That's exactly right. Yeah, Schmuck's, we go way back, obviously. I think I was 13 years old, so.
And he's done just about anything you can do within the media and the ski industry. And has he played kind of a mentor maybe from when he met you and trying to help you with your career? Or did he just get you skis and you ran with it from there?
A lot of the time he'll help out behind the scenes. I'll get approached by a new sponsor and I'll be like, okay, sweet. This is sick. You found me. And then I'll find out like years later, like that Schmuck actually made the connection or something like that. So yeah, he definitely has your back. It might not even be looking for credit for it. More when I was getting started, but you just always have advice and have the right contacts and stuff. So definitely appreciate the support.
It's nice to have someone within the industry who's looking out for you and helping you. You had Line as a sponsor early on. Who is sponsoring you now? After Line was a long-term sponsor from the beginning, who is sponsoring you now?
That's why I'm taking a year off, is nobody is.
Whoa, so no sponsors whatsoever?
Last year I skied for Libtech and I was on Giro goggles for 3 years. So basically what happened this year, I actually do a really good job. I don't give myself enough credit, I think, of finding partners and kind of handling the business side of things myself, but I'm not that good at it. I just really, yeah, I don't know.
I'll interrupt real quick and say you actually are that good at it. You reached out to me about the show. You've been very good about keeping in contact with me, and we made this thing happen. And I will tell you, there's a lot of people that are like, hey, I want to be on the show. And I'm like, yeah, that would be great. We should talk about it. And then I never hear from them again because they're not that professional. That's the one thing I did think from you with not knowing you at all was like, this kid is on his shit.
Thank you. To me, it doesn't always feel that way. And even reaching out like that, it gives me quite a bit of anxiety. You know, it's kind of cheesy to do it for yourself and whatnot. So that's just my own personal thing. But basically what happened is about this time last year, I contacted an agent. This is like a huge outreach for me. Like this is like beyond anything I've ever done before. She's like the biggest agent. Well, one of the biggest agents in action sports. Like her other clients are Travis Rice and Paul Rodriguez and stuff.
Which agent are we talking about?
Her name's Cersei Wallace.
She's, okay. Yeah. She used to be a badass professional rider back in the day for Ride, I believe.
Exactly. Yeah. I sent her an email, like kind of explaining what I was all about, and she was really receptive and like super keen to kind of work with me, but kind of on a low key, like she introduced me to a few brands and it was kind of like a friendship more or less. And she still is a really good friend today. And then I got the offer for the TV show and then she was stoked to like sign me immediately. It was a long summer where I thought she would be pitching me more and stuff. So I was really happy to have it in someone else's hands because it saved me a lot of stress, sort of. And
yep.
It seemed like things were pretty good. It was like the ideal situation for me, like kind of a dream situation, to be honest. So basically, yeah, it just ended up falling through. And so all my like partnerships and potential partnerships vanished. And so I kind of wish I had kept doing it myself. And I will from now on, for sure.
Okay, so you learned a lesson there. It's like you need to take control of your career and your sponsors. And while it's great to have an agent doing something for you, you almost have to get to a certain level before you really need somebody doing it for you.
And I didn't really know this, but you still need to like find the partners yourself or like be big enough that they'll find you. And then the agents are kind of just to do the negotiation. And for that, it's really helpful because, yeah, you don't have any kind of personal connection to...
Yeah, I mean, it's nice to have an agent hearing all the shitty things a sponsor can say. They can say a lot of good and bad things about you, but as long as you don't have to hear them, because that can frustrate an athlete. When, oh, well, yeah, you're getting all this coverage, but you don't think to put the logo here. You don't do this. You don't do that. You know, which is all part of a sponsorship agreement, but it's always nice to be able to say that through an agent.
Yeah, 100%.
I did not know you were on LibTech. I think that's pretty cool. I actually just interviewed their CEO on my Pal Movement show, and that's out now.
Yeah, Anthony's rad.
Yeah, he's an amazing guy, and I think their ski program's going to change for the better moving forward. So you've been on some great ski brands, from Line to Salomon to LibTech. I look at Line and LibTech as being the irreverent-type brands that are going to be totally different than anybody else in an industry, and Salomon's one that's really supported athletes for a long time. What are some of the other major moments in your ski career? Because I do want to talk about your reality show as well, but I do want to get the skiing out, because it is totally separate. You've skied for 20 some odd years, and you've done reality TV for one. So it is a really different conversation that we'll have when we talk about TV. What are the biggest moments of your ski career?
It's moments, but it's also the moments are very small. It might be on like a bigger trip or something, but there'll be defining moments of that time where you feel like you've really accomplished something. I did a trip to Bella Coola with Salomon Freeski TV, and like that is such a coveted kind of location. And not many people get to go there. And the skiing that's gone down there is so crazy. But it was more stuff. For example, Sammy Carlson was living in the same house as me in Revelstoke for a bit. And so he was filming his project there. And I just got back from Europe. And one of his filmers was Brad Holmes.
Wow, that's cool.
He does like drone stuff now, I guess. So I'm talking to Brad Holmes. And I'm like, yeah, I'm heading to Bella Coola. And he's like, oh, sick. Like, I've had some good times there. Like, who are you going with? I'm like, oh, Mike Douglas. And he's like, oh yeah, Douglas. Like, obviously, like they go way back. And he's like, yeah, tell Douglas I say hi. Tell Christian Beijin, who owns the operation, who made all the mountain bike films I used to watch. He's like, tell him I said hi too. And just to kind of be in that historic circle as kids, that was my idols. And like to have reached that level and then be still pushing beyond it in other avenues other than skiing. I had a similar experience with Sage. The first time I met him, he like walked up and was like, obviously super friendly. He's the man. And was just like, hey man, it's great to finally meet you. Like, I love watching your edits. I was like, oh, sweet. Likewise. And, but then like, I was riding up the chairlift and I was thinking like, holy shit, this guy's like the reason I ski. You know what I mean? Like, I've seen everything he's ever done for the last 10 years. That's crazy.
Yeah, that's wild. It is cool when your idols become your friends and it can totally change your perspective. It's never really happened for me because I don't have the talent that you have, but I can only imagine what that would be like just reading the magazines, seeing these guys in the magazines your whole life, watching their video parts, and then all of a sudden you're staying with Holmes and Sammy and it's like, holy shit, this is crazy. It's finally happened.
Yeah, 100%.
And so you get yourself to a place in skiing where not too many people can get themselves to the professional level where you're staying with the Sammy Carlsons. Brad Holmes is there in a support role. And it's a pretty cool place for you to be. And then you make a choice to be part of the Timber Creek Lodge reality show that's on Bravo TV. How did you get into the reality TV world?
They were trying to source out people in the Whistler area and they were looking for a skier. And so my friend's agent, who was looking for people, had heard of me before. So she suggested that I send a video to the actual production company that made it. They asked like a bunch of different skiers who also submitted videos. I guess they just liked mine, or they liked me, I guess.
Can you let us know who didn't get the job?
I do, but I don't think I should say it because I think it's something that they wouldn't be stoked on. They don't want people to know that they were trying to get on it.
Oh,
it's because of the stigma around the thing.
And then they'll probably clown you behind your back and you won't let us know who they are.
Yeah.
That's very big of you. All right. Well, damn it. So you were able to get this job amongst a bunch of pro skiers in Whistler who really wanted it, sent in videos and couldn't get it. But we don't know who they are, which is fine.
Yeah. I don't know if it was a bunch, but definitely a couple. Yeah.
And what were your fears going into this? Because I'm sure you have to have some preconceived notions of what being on a reality TV show could do to your ski career.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, no. I guess it's just fully not caring. Just being like, oh, whatever. Like, I'm just going to take this and see what happens. being comfortable taking that risk.
Okay.
Honestly, the ski career was not even a concern. It was more just me as a human being exploited for entertainment purposes. And, you know, they film every second, 24 hours a day for over 5 weeks. They can get stuff. And not even that. I was more worried about them paraphrasing me the wrong way and making me say things that I didn't say, I guess.
Okay.
So that was all a concern. But I knew that I'd be able to handle it and that no matter what, I'd still be me. And the people who know me know who I am and that other people can think whatever they want. But honestly, the responses to me and my character on the show were like super overwhelmingly positive, like on Twitter and stuff, and just really, really boosted my self-confidence, I'd say. And so like, it's been a great experience, I'd say.
Awesome. So I have some questions. My wife loves the show and her friend Caitlin loves it as well.
That makes me really happy to hear that. That's awesome.
Yeah. So I've watched it a few times and they came up with some questions that I need to ask.
Yes.
So would you do anything different after seeing yourself on TV now? What would you do different if you had to refilm?
Man, honestly, nothing, because I took more risks while I was there. There was one episode where they kind of make me look like a bit of, I wouldn't say womanizer, that was partially paraphrased. The thing is, I promoted so many like positive messages and things that just don't get used. There's so much footage and there's so many quotes, but at the end of the day, they choose the things that are the most entertaining for people. More drama and stuff like that. Just kind of like the lowest form of human entertainment, I'd say, is what they end up going with. It could have been an amazing, it did really well in terms of ratings and viewership for its category, but at the end of the day, it's all up to the network. The production company will make numerous cuts and involve certain things, and then the network decides what they like the most or what will be the most successful. It's not necessarily the best TV, but it's what will get the most viewership and the most response. So
no, I can see that. And from the show itself, you spend a lot of the show trying to sleep with the guests. And I don't find anything wrong with that. You're a single professional skier who should be indulging in whatever he chooses to do. Was that just the show making it look like that? Or is that just how you roll?
I wouldn't say I roll like that full time, but I think the people that I was, whatever, like were people I was actually attracted to. So it wasn't fake. I don't know. That's not how I necessarily am in full time. I've been in like long-term relationships and sometimes I just want to be myself. But in that kind of situation, I definitely wasn't doing it for the cameras. It was like, yeah, why not? Or at least get to know them better, I think was more the goal. But that's funny.
And did that TV experience make it so after being on TV, you know, now when you walk the streets, you probably get recognized from people. Is it pretty much a layup every time you go to the bar if you want it to be?
Not every time. Every once in a while, someone from the bar will recognize me. Or even like someone will, today is so different. Someone will see me in the street and then hit me up on Instagram like that night and be like, oh, hey, I think I saw you. You know, it's like kind of a way of not directly confronting someone, I guess. And I think in this day and age, that's what's available. So it's the way people choose to be. And then I'll like, yeah, I'll go meet someone or whatever. I think it's kind of cool. So, and why not? If they enjoy watching the show and whatnot, I'd be stoked if I was like a fan of a show and I like reached out to them and they wanted to hang out. Like, that'd be sweet. So I don't mind. I'm friendly.
Do you use Tinder?
No, not anymore.
No need to anymore?
Well, we definitely don't need to, and I just don't really want to be seen on there. I used it for like maybe a year, and it was really fun. And yeah, so in the show, I even say that I'm like a Tinder advocate, and we use Tinder in the show. But yeah, I guess I just kind of got over it. It's such a like chase. You spend so much time, and I just, yeah, don't want to be on my phone that much, so.
Okay, and then what is up with Mark? Is he just a fame whore?
Oh my God.
I think Mark's the snowboarder, right?
No, he's
okay, I don't know. This is one of the questions from the girls.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, can I do a no comment?
And then there's an episode with the Texans. How much of that was staged? It seemed like it could have been, but who knows?
Man, nothing on the entire show was staged. I'm not kidding you. Everything that happened was 100% real. And the production company was so thrilled with the stuff they were getting, they didn't even ask us to do anything because they knew they were going to get it. You know what I mean? It just all happened. And that's why I think there was such a good vibe about it and it was so successful, is because it was fully natural. And that was the other thing I was really afraid of going into it, is I didn't want to do the fake stuff at all. Like, that's just not me at all. So I didn't know what to expect or like what they would ask. And I even like the first couple days, I was pretty standoffish. I had to like meet with one of the major network people who was on site and be like, hey, I'll give you what you want, but don't force me to do anything. Like, I know how this business works. And then they kind of backed off and respected me. But I just really wanted to make it clear right away that I'm not an idiot. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just like, I'm not someone just looking for 15 seconds of fame. This is my entire livelihood and my reputation. And I'll make you an entertaining show just by being me, but don't, you know what I'm saying? I don't know.
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you're saying. Yeah, don't force me to be in situations where I'm becoming a clown, because I'm a clown enough on my own that I can give you the content you want. You don't need to try to stage it.
Yeah, 100%.
Those are the girls' questions. But to me, I look at it all as, in skiing, it's tough to make money, and you have to make choices based on the longevity of your career. And I look at your story and it's like you come from a small podunk town that's teeny with nobody, and you grow up with not a ton of money. It's not shocking. It's kind of almost funny that like the big choices that you make based on the talent that you have that allow you to make these choices are to get on a TV show that's going to blow you up and get you in front of millions of people. And hopefully you're also able to make a good amount of money. I did some research on reality TV show stars just to see what they would make. And obviously you're not in the Kardashian realm. I wish you were, because that would be pretty awesome at the 10 million or so they get per season. But it sounds like a B-list celebrity show was kind of where you fit into the picture. And it looked like between 15 and 50K per season is what someone could expect on a show like that. Is that in the ballpark of what you get for reality TV?
Yeah, that's it. Exactly. Yeah, I honestly haven't really worked since. I obviously work, but I haven't like had a job since necessarily. And obviously I'm not sponsored anymore. So I instantly paid off my student loan. That was like a big thing. I never even had a student loan. I paid it off before they started charging interest. So that was
sweet. Canadian, man. What's your student loan? Like 15 toonies? And throw in a loonie there too and we'll be good.
Yeah, thank God.
Yeah. Your education's pretty much free. And it sounds like it's put you in a great place because you have a degree. You live in Disneyland pretty much. You're able to ski a lot. It sounds like you're surfing now. And I know that's a big passion of yours. Also, I think you skate. I don't know if you do that anymore. But at this point in your career, will there be another season of your reality show? And if so, or even if not, what's the next steps of your ski career too?
I can't answer the season two question.
Okay.
Contractually.
Well, if you have a contract still, that's good. So that would make me think that there's something else going on. But that's me.
They pretty much own your life. Anyway, that's how that works.
50 grand, you can own Colston's life. I think if you go to 75, you can take him and do whatever you'd like to him.
Yeah, basically. That's pretty much my day rate right there.
All right.
So in terms of like what I want to do with a career, like I do want to keep doing TV stuff. I want to host documentaries. So I want to kind of involve my studies from a like political, social justice, geopolitical standpoint and fun, charismatic, funny documentaries that also deal with real issues, relevant issues. So that's what I've been working on for the last little bit. And it's really tough because to me, it is completely new and I've had a blank slate, which is scary. So I'm frothing to ski, to be honest. I'm going to go to the JP Memorial.
Nice.
Yeah, that's going to be super fun.
What's the date on that? We should make sure everybody knows, because I think this will air right before it.
March 8th to 11th. And it's open. Like, anyone can come and shred.
April, right?
Come shred. It's going to be a blast.
April 8th through 11th?
Yep.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Everybody should know about JP. He was an inspiration to all. I think he was one of your heroes growing up.
Oh, 100%. And then, yeah, meeting him was amazing, obviously. Like, he's one of the most humble people I've ever met. So, one of those people where you're like, yeah, this guy is awesome. Even if you skied or not. Yeah.
Yeah, he was a whole lot more than skiing. It's skiing would be the last thing you talk to him about. You'd find out he was a pro skier at the end of your 2-hour conversation. You'd be like, holy crap, he was a professional skier too.
Mm-hmm. And that exact mentality has shaped me as well.
Well, that's pretty cool. Well, Colston, I thank you for your time. We're going to have some more of you over on Inappropriate Questions. I have Pep Fuhas, who's asking you 3 questions. You're going to ask Kim Reichhelm 3 questions. And I want to thank you. It'll be interesting to see what happens with season 2, if there is one. You haven't told us. I'm guessing that there is. And thanks a lot, man. We'll talk to you soon.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Mike. Nice to meet you. Good times.
So that was time with Colston Beebe, and there's more Colston Beebe over on thepalmovement.com on Inappropriate Questions. Also, next Monday on thepalmovement.com, we have Peter Line, an iconic visionary snowboarder. He was the founder of the Forum 8 and has a ton of history within the snowboard world to share. That is on Monday on thepalmovement.com.
As always, if you have any show feedback for me, you can reach me at mike@thepowellmovement.com or at PowellMovement1 on Twitter. On behalf of Powder Magazine, thanks for listening and talk to you next week.